little about my succession. Shulchan Aruch is a little bit hard to understand. In Rishimun Reish Mem Tes, Kama Chayv Litin Stoka, the Ketzad Yidnena, how much are we obligated to give Stoka? What's the extent of the obligation and how should we distribute it? It's the Shir Nesinoso, the Shir that I should give Im Yodo Masegis, if I'm capable, Yiten Kipi Tzorach Aniyim, I should give according to the Tzorach of the Aniyim. And if I can't give the Torah of the Aniyim, you should give one fifth of his Nechosim, that's mitzvah and a mufcha, that's preferable. And an average share is a tenth. Pachos Mikan Ayin Ra is a person that's stingy. Now, so what is the share? Day machsera is a pasuk. You're supposed to give it only day machsera. So if that's the shear, so why did Chazal say ve'en yodo maseges kol kach yiten at chaymish nechosov? And then the Ramah is going to add to this, well, yivaz b'zodem yoysim echaymish, lo yitztarach lebris. So what was the shear and the sinosa of day machsera? If we understand it, that it is to be more than that, but the Ramah ends off, Ayivazes on the Yosem Chomash Lo Yitztarach Lebrius. So, what did the Shulchan Aruch mean at the beginning that the Shir is Dei Machsera? Now, I think there are two ways that we can learn. The way the Aruch HaShulchan seems to learn is the following, that when we lived Alad Masakoyt in Eretz Yisrael, so relatively in the community, poverty was not great. And there was a large wealthy class of people. So the wealthy class did not have such a hard time, relatively, taking care of the underclass. And consequently, Dei Machsera was enough. And Dei Machsera, according to the Aruch HaShulchan, would not even come to the issue of 10% or 20%. There wasn't such a big need. So there wasn't such a big need to give Dei Machsera, and that's it, and you go home. You don't have to give money where it's not needed. Now, when we went into the Golos, so then the demographics changed. We had a lot of poor people and very few rich people. So the rich people, if a Dei Machsera, that was, as the Aruch HaShulchan says, they could have dumped all their money out, they still wouldn't have solved the problems of poverty. Still would have been poor people. So, what should they do? They can no longer do Dei Machsera because the balance between the wealthy and the poor shifted dramatically in the other direction. So he says, now you should go up to 10% or the 20%. But that's on the way up. That's the way he's learning. That's the way he's learning. In other words, initially, Dei Machsera sufficed, and that might have been 5%, 3%. But now that you wound up in the Golos, and the demographics has changed, and there's a huge amount of poor people, so in Dei Machsera, there's no means, reasonable means of, even if we, he said, even if we gave all our money away, we still wouldn't solve the problem. Yeah, good, that's Master. A shame. Yeah, good. So that was from agricultural products. It was limited. Okay. And that there was, you know, it didn't necessarily provide a guy with everything that he needed. It was some help for the poor people. Okay. But, you know, from the agricultural produce, that's not the world of society, it's not only agricultural produce. That's the way he learns. There is a possibility now, his pshat fits in very well with the Ramah, because the Ramah So, the Shulchan Aruch does not seem to articulate the possibility of a person giving more than a chaimish. But there is perhaps another way we can learn the Mechaber. There are those that learn. Chofetz Chaim, Zatzal, in Avos Chesed, discusses who's allowed to give more than a chaimish. Who's allowed to give more than a chaimish of his nechosim? So you took any particularly given year. So you're talking from the profits that he made this year, if he'll give more than a chaimish. So what will happen? So if your name is Bill Gates, Michael Bloomberg, probably nothing's going to happen to you. Michael Bloomberg, by all estimations, he is 11 years since he came to office as mayor of New York. In that time, his fortune doubled. Then he was estimated to have somewhere around $19 billion, and then he has $37, $38 billion. He's the eighth richest man in the United States now. Now, so in 11 years, he made himself another $19 billion. He's probably given away, in that time, maybe $3 billion, probably. Something like that, you know. Somewhere. I mean, he gives, you know, it would not be unusual for him to give $300 million a year to over $300 million a year to charity. So, listen, if he ramped it up and he gave 30%, he's not about to go to the... But the reason is, as the quotes the Gemara, Shalei Yitzarach L'Brius. You shouldn't become impoverished and yourself have to ask people to help you. You know, people that overdo it. And I've seen such things. People get all excited about stock and they dole out money, which is way over the head. And the chickens come home to roost. But if a person is well established, a very wealthy man doesn't have this problem. He's not dealing, you know, this is all the income is ultimately discretionary income. If he gives 100% of his income away, it doesn't make a difference. Because what he has until now, he can't use up in any reasonable fashion. So someone said, Osher Muflug, there is no share. So we will assume, we could assume, that maybe the Shulchan Aruch is talking about that. Meaning, the guy's extremely wealthy. An extremely wealthy guy. In other words, we're not talking about 10%, but I'm talking about 20%. He can, what should he do? Dei machsir. To the extent that he can, if he can help, you know, give away, and he can afford to give away 50% of his income. And in his locale, he'll take care of all the aniyim. It's wonderful. That's what he should do. But if he doesn't have that much money or too many aniyim, so we can't do day machsira. It's beyond his ability. So then Chazal said, so if that's beyond your ability, you just can't hit it to that extent. So you're not such an osher muflug compared to the needs. So then you should stick to 10 to 20%. And maybe that's when the Ramah is coming in to say, Vivazer means the person that we talked about is giving 10 to 20%. He's not such an Osher Muflug. So, Yainacharam, he should stay within the bounds of 20%. He shouldn't go past that. Because he may wind up placing himself in poverty, in a state of poverty, if he's reckless and just giving out money. So, we could perhaps learn the Shulchan Aruch in that way too. That perhaps, in other words, he's indicating the Chiddush that the Chofetz Chaim says, that if a person is very, very well endowed, so he's allowed, he's not limited by Chaimish.
Even rich people bankrupt because they leverage the money.
Yeah, but usually, the one thing you find out with rich people, after they bankrupt, they're still rich, most of them. You know, they don't put all their personal funds into being leveraged, you know. They put some of their personal money, they have a nice bit of their personal money outside that realm, you know. They go bankrupt, okay, so they lost some money, and a lot of people lost money, but they keep on living well, by and large. The few of them wind up in the poorhouse, few, you know. So, that perhaps could be the pshat in the Shulchan Aruch. So perhaps it's Meramis to the Chofetz Chaim's Chiddush. At least what the Chofetz Chaim quotes, that if a person is very wealthy, then the sky's the limit. So I think I mentioned to you, but I did mention to you last time that, you know, I'm not used to dealing with people that have huge amount of funds. That's not, you know, I don't play in that league. But as I said, I have a someone that gives, he can give a $500,000, $1 million a year for tzedakah. He earns well. So he asked me a shayla. I says, I'm giving chaymish, but according to the needs that I would like to take care of, I have to go beyond chaymish. So should I go beyond it? So I didn't know what I should answer. So I sent the shayla to Rabbi Yoshev Zatzal. Rabbi Yoshev sent me back an answer that if the person really has a tam in giving tzedakah, then push him further. Nothing wrong. So I did. The person's probably giving between 30 and 35% of his income today.
What about the Hidur Mitzvah?
What?
Hidur Mitzvah.
Yeah. he's able to do it. You know, he's able to do it. It's not a problem for him. Not about to wind up in the poorhouse because he gave 35% of his money, of his income to tzedakah this year. So this is the baseline chiyuv. Now the shaila is what one should be doing with this money. Now this is a whole, this becomes a very complicated story. First let's go to the other extreme. In Sif Beis, there's Lo'ilam lo yimna adam asma pochus mishlishus al shekel l'shana. A person should give a third of a shekel l'shana. In other words, everybody has to be mekayem mitzvah tzedakah. So the Shach tells us that this is 1/30th the amount that you would have to give for pidyon haben. 1/30th what it would cost you for pidyon haben. That's the minimum shear for tzedakah. So it comes out the least that it could, the most it could have been. So it's $5-6. That's what comes out, right? When the silver was at its height, so it was $40 or so an ounce. So, you know, it cost you $160, $200 in that range, you know. So that means 1/30th. That was $6 or so, seven as the max. That at least you yaitz it at the bottom level. Mitzvah stocker. So the Shach says a very interesting thing. He says that's why in his time there were noyig, that the shamas went around on Mondays and Thursdays with the pushkin collected. He said why? Because even if you give basically a penny, each, you know, just about the smallest coin that they had in use, says, by the end of the year you'll have given the minimum for tzedakah. You'll be yotzei mitzvah tzedakah. So that's why he says the shamas in his time used to go around with the pushkin on Mondays and Thursdays and everybody threw something in. And he says mameila, by the end of the year everybody was Makai Mitzvah Stokot. There was a man, I forgot his name, I think his name was, I don't remember his name, the only man I remember came in those, his name might have been Finkel, but I don't remember, I don't know him. We knew him as Charlie, what his real name was, I have no idea. Rabbi Kamen knew him. You never met someone in this country as poor as this person. The likes of his poverty was, you know, not shy to imagine. And yet, on Shabbos, he used to invite guests. Guests that were more unfortunate than he was to share a Suda Shabbos with him. But that was, people used to send him food, this and that for Shabbos, but he invited guests to share the little, whatever little he had with others less fortunate than he was. And as I said, you never met a person more poor in your life than this man. So even at the bottom rung, everyone is mechuyev to participate in stokas. Now the shaila is how to evaluate what's mechuyev in maaser.
Are we using maaser and stokah interchangeably?
They are. In other words, maaser is amount you should dedicate to stokah. But as I think, and we're going to see, it's reflected really in the Shulchan Aruch too. The Ramban wrote that Maaser was principally made for Achzokas HaTorah. That's the Medrash that he quotes. So we're going to see in Sif Tes Zayin, we have the following. Yesh Mishayim Hashemitzvah Spesek Neses Adifah Mimitzvah Tzedakah. The Mechaber says that someone says that the mitzvah of taking care of building a shul is greater than Mitzvah Tzedakah. But that's general Tzedakah. Mitzvah Tzedakah L'Narim L'Ulma Torah, and supporting people that learn Torah, or to people that are ill and they can't pay for their medical care, that's all the mitzvahs basic necessities. So it comes out the highest priorities are to provide medical care for a person that's sick, that can't afford it otherwise, or to be machzik Torah. And that, the Shulchan Aruch agrees, is more important than basic necessities. And on him he says there are those that say that the basic necessities is greater than stam tzedakah. The Gra and many others take the exception to this psak, and they say that they quote Rishalmi. The Rishalmi is a very striking Rishalmi. Rav Choma bar Chanina bar Rav Hoshea Rabba havu metaylin b'ilin knishta de Lud. They were taking a tour of the Bate Knesias of Lud. Amalei Rav Choma bar Chanina the Rav Huna, the Rav Hoshea Rabba kama mokum shoko avu saikan. Look at the amount, look at how much my forebears are from Lud, that they invested in this city to build the infrastructure. You see these shuls. This, you know, my Zaydis, you know, they spent heavily to build these places. Amalei, so this didn't sit well with Rav Hoshea Rabba. He says, kama nefoshes ibdu avasechakan. How many lives did they destroy? Is what they did. There were no people that were learning that needed to be supported. You know, you built a Shangri-La. You know, that's what happened. And then the Gemara relates another story. The Gemara says, Rav Avun Avdalei Tara L'Sidra Rabba. He made up a gate. Nochos Rabboni L'Gabei Onomer Chomi Ma'ada Abdes. He says, look what I made, this beautiful gate. Omalei V'Yishkach Yisrael Ezoseya V'Yimene Cholos. The Rabboni, they Klai Yisrael forgot the Rabboni Shalom and they built edifices. Milo Havim Barnash Dilum Baraisa. Now somehow Girsus Tashbats also was a cholim hamutolim la'ashba. And or are they not cholim that there's nobody, they have no care? Then there's a whole shayla what the diak is supposed to make from this Yerushalmi. Our kolponim, the Goyin learns that this is does not agree with this. This is a marik. And he says that it's not true. Basic Nesses, Aruch HaShulchan says, it depends really at what level we're talking about. If we're talking, he said, making a super fancy shul, you know, that's over the top. But if we're talking about making a basic, you know, Balabatish shul, and they don't have one in that city, he says, it sounds like in Lud they had plenty of shuls. Elam Boteknesius, you know, they had a lot of them. So either that, you know, so they weren't necessary, you know. So each guy, this was his personal edifice, you know. This was the Shmerel shul, you know. So for Dairus, everyone knows he went to the Shmerel shul. Was the Shmerel shul needed? Did it have to be so well appointed? You know. So that's the issue, he says. But the basic nesses, maybe Enochanami, is not to be dismissed, that we should, you know, daven and hovel and to be machzik Torah. That's not what the Yerushalmi meant. Yerushalmi meant that beyond the basics, you have to have a perspective on what you're doing. Rav Ruderman Zatzal used to relate the following story, that during the First World War, so the yeshiva gave chalukah. So he was very, very stingy with using the money for the chalukah, and he saved up some money, and he went and he bought a talisqot in Muhuderes, a beautiful talisqot. So he went and he told the altar of Slobotka's Rebbe what he did. So the altar started yelling at him. The altar wiped the floor with him. He said, in the middle of a Muhammad, this is what you spend money on. Tzitzis? He says, you take an old undershirt, you tear up the sides, and you put in the tzitzis. There are people that are starving. I want to see Simon, people starving in the middle of a war. He says, how in the world did you spend money for such a thing at this time? You know, the altar always demanded that we have a broad look. Not to get fixated on one point and failed to see the entire picture. Chazal wanted us to see the whole story. The whole story, not part of the story. So we have at the top of the list the Zachzokas HaTorah, the Shulchan Aruch says, and Chaylim Aniyim, Chaylim that don't have the means of taking care of their medical needs. Those are the highest callings in stock. Now there are more. Now there are all types of machlokes, and the Aruch HaShulchan takes a very practical approach through it all. You know, in terms of the Aruch HaShulchan is very liberal in the sense that business expenses should be deducted from ISA. There are those you'll find on the page that were not so convinced that business expenses ought to be deducted, but the Aruch HaShulchan is poshut that you have to deduct business expenses. Now, when we talk about business expenses, we're easier going than the IRS in that regard. You know, the IRS says, listen, you commute to work, it's on your cheshbon, your first job. It's hard to deduct, for clothing that you needed for the job. It's very, very hard to deduct. So you have to hire a babysitter, so you can go to work. That's also, this is what enables you to work. These are also parts of the business expenses. So the Aruch HaShulchan is very liberal with deducting business expenses. Included in business expenses are taxes which come off the top. Such as we're talking about income taxes, Social Security taxes which come off the top are legitimate deductions. You don't have to give maaser on that. The Social Security income, when you zoichan, you come out on the other end and they start paying you, so you have to give maaser from that. That, yes. So, the sales taxes are not deductible from maaser. The maaser you earn money. Now when you're spending it, it costs more than you would want it to cost. Now, what happens? You're going to tell me like this. I could buy it on Main Street. I'll pay $150 for it. I can go to Target and I'll pay $100. But it happens to be, listen, I'm tired, I'm cold, and I'm lazy. So I'll go to Main Street and spend $150 for it. So good. So therefore what? That's part of your cost of buying it. You had a choice. You could have bought it for. Is a cost. Tax is a part of the cost that you have. That's all. That's what the items that are costing. Should have cost $100. It cost $100. The government mixed in, and now it costs $120. That's the cost. It's money that you spent. It's not money that was, taken from you initially. That's part of your spending. That's not deductible. The commuting expenses are deductible. Now, you have benefits. How do you deal with benefits? There are different types of benefits. There are benefits which you have no practical gain from presently. In other words, if they put money into a retirement account for you, so yet presently you're not benefiting from it. You have it's not money that you can use, not money you want to use. So you could argue in that case that you should not have to pay MISA for it until you take the money out. It should be exempt from MISA. At that time, it'll be the non-Roth IRA of Tzedaka. When you take it out, you'll have to pay the tax, the MISA. But if you get a fringe benefit, for example, let's say they pay health insurance for you. If you still have one of those few employers, you work for the state. You're in a city, yeah. So then they pay the health insurance for you at B.S. Agoyo until Bashiach comes, What? Whoever happens to pay, But it's at B.S. Agoyo.
Okay.
So Pashtus is that you should have to pay Maisa from that. because that's an immediate benefit. Listen, a person would normally in society, a normal person would purchase whole health insurance. And consequently, if my employer paid for it, so that's also, see, he saved me $8,000 out of my pocket.
So payroll, you gotta pay in towards your health insurance, and you have to pay in towards everything.
So whatever you pay in, you take off.
You have to figure out how much am I paying the doctor, $15 or $20. How much? What is surgery? $100. How much am I paying the dentist? Nothing. But.
I'm not dealing on the side of the benefits. I'm dealing, every person would pay for health insurance up front.
Okay.
Right? So now, my employer's paying, so he gave me $18,000 a year, but then he paid.
Okay.
Good. So if I'm not paying, bearing any of the cost of the health insurance, so then I got $18,000 that's subject to MISA. Now you'll ask me something else. What happens if, it was a tough year? And at the end of the year, you took out $50,000. So pashtus advarim, you should have to forgive Maisa on that too. In other words, not on the first 18 that you gave Maisa for already, but what you gained above that, if you're a bar hochi, you gained. If you're not a bar hochi, you're not a bar hochi. But pashtus, in other words, I put in $18,000, right? And this year, a guy wasn't well, and he took out $30,000 from the 18. So 18, he paid up front. Now we got another $12,000 he got, which he didn't pay on. So I don't know why he should be potter on that. Well, we're good. If it's such an enormous bill, he's not a bar hochi to pay it. Okay, he's not mechur, he's not mechuyif to go into poverty to pay maisa, in a chanami. But maisa, it's income. No less income than any other income. At the end of the day. So this is a big area that needs really attention. I mean, that's. There's controversy around it. I don't see why really there should be, controversy at this level. In other words, the first step for sure, in terms of that if they pay your health insurance, that you buy any now. If they buy you a Cadillac plan, what we call a Cadillac plan, I wouldn't pay for a Cadillac plan. It's not what I would pay for. If I had to pay for myself, I'm not, I stick to a slimmed-down version. I'd buy the $14,000 version. I wouldn't buy the $20,000 version. Okay. So that's general and true. Anytime that I get a gift, the guy comes and gives me a gift. Guy comes and he'll give me a fancy sports car. Right? And I... Fine. So, listen. I'm not spending, $100,000 on the car. On a Jaguar. Not happening. But, what would I pay for a Jaguar? Something I'd pay. Whatever, I pay $30,000 for a regular car. To have the shots of driving around in a Jaguar, maybe I pay $40,000. So that's what I got from it. The rest is not relevant to me. So the same is true here. In other words, if the employer gave you a Cadillac then, and I wouldn't purchase a Cadillac, but I'm not mechuyev if you give Maisa on that part. In other words, up front.
But if the person got benefits, not the plan.
Yeah.
But if he was sick, he got $20,000
in charge, I would think.
I went right to the doctor. He has to pay?
I'll think about it more. My natia is he should have to pay.
No, I don't even know how much this
But
is.
As I say, I will think about it. I'm not too, I don't want to, you
if
know.
If was really sick, it could be 100,000.
So I'm saying if he's not a bar hoch, he's not a bar hoch.
He's not really receiving anything. He's just being covered. It's insurance.
So we'll talk about it more. I'll leave that as an open question right now.
You can't even figure out how much the city is paying towards you, GHI. You know that you're paying a hefty amount. And what are they paying? I don't know. They don't put it down in there.
Go find out what COBRA is, and you'll find out.
Okay, so on the benefits that they pay, my tier is one should have to pay on them, but as I say, let's leave that as an open question now. Let's, we don't have to solve all the questions that come up.
So if you take out insurance, flood insurance, and you get flood, you have to pay for the amount that they give you?
No, because that's the difference. You didn't get, you got paid back your hefset. In other words, you asked me like this. In other words, what would happen in an insurance claim if I made money on the insurance claim policy this year?
No, I didn't make money.
Well, okay, I made money. Okay.
Right, you made money, right? You paid $5,000, you took out $15,000.
Okay.
So we have the same issue.
And you can get a flood.
We have the same issue. Let's leave it as an open question. I'd rather not be machriyah to Shaila tonight.
One minute. So if someone, let's say, gets from his job, he gets, let's say, free flood insurance, whatever that cost is, let's say it's $5,000.
If you would pay for a five, if you would pay,
you would pay for it. So you have to give, let's say, five, give 10%, right? So you have to give $500.
Yes.
The year you're going to have a flood that year, and $40,000 you get reimbursed.
Yes, so I'm not
and
sure.
You have to.
So I would.
Or Meiser, you already gave Meiser on the premium.
Yeah, so okay, let's leave it as an open question.
Well, what would be the havamina that you have to give?
Because there's a revach. You made a revach now.
It's not a revach.
You had a loss. You had a loss. You paid a premium. You paid insurance. You get that.
Loss.
Why are you paying twice?
You're right in that regard. No, there's something else that you're right about. You are right in this regard. In this case, in this case, you're clearly right. The hainu. And you get reimbursed in insurance, you can take the losses off connected the gains, right? So a mailer, they only reimburse the loss that you have. Right? Let's say you had a flood, right? So they don't stump give you money.
Only if you had a hefset.
So you had a good. So a mailer, that hefset you can take off from the revach that you got from them. So a mailer, it's a wash.
No, the hefset, let's say, was $40,000 and your premiums.
No, but there's another thing.
Out.
Good. That's fine. But I also had a hefset of $40,000. Mm-hmm. Good. So that I could also deduct.
Deduct from the Meiser?
Yeah, sure. From the revach. I got $40,000 from the insurance company, right? But I lost $40,000. That's what they gave it to me. So that's a wash.
Yes. So if you lose money not directly correlated, you have work and you lost money in the stock market. So you also deduct that from your income.
Yeah, in economics. There you do. It doesn't have to be directly correlated. Within that year's time.
It's your net income.
It's net, right? So this is a wash. And an insurance payment like that nature, it's going to be a wash. The shaila is how to count, in other words, in health insurance, is not so simple.
Had a loss too, but not the same type.
Yeah, so it's hard, you know, it's hard to quantify in dollars and cents
also
so easily.
Sometimes they can compensate you for more than you were paid.
What?
If they would compensate you for more than you actually were paid to repair the damage.
So you made revach. Then in Achanami you made revach.
And that would certainly be
in other words, listen, if you had a good adjuster and he, you know, did a job on them, and at the end of the day, you know, he managed to jack the price up, and you're a slick guy, so you managed to do it for two-thirds of the money that they gave you.
Yeah.
Couldn't we say the same svara with the medical insurance? When a person gets sick, incurring the debt is a loss, and the compensation is a wash.
But that, what loss did you have?
The person gets sick, so that costs $20,000 in doctor bills.
But you,
now he's got hit with a $20,000 deficit.
You didn't pay it. In your house, if you had a flood, so you had you had $15,000 damage, right? So the guy had to come, and then the plumbers and the carpenters had to fix it down, and the carpet guys and fix the mess.
But you don't consider the human being to be the...
A human being, we can't exactly quantify. That's why I want to leave it as an open question. We can't how are we going to quantify?
Well, maybe by what the doctors charge. But that's the quantitative loss of.
Okay, let's leave this as an open question. I don't think we're going to have a simple accounting means of solving this problem. You know, on a property damage, a casualty loss, so there's a loss. I'm a mailer, I got, you know, so there's a gain and a loss, and it's a wash.
You have a young guy, he doesn't care, he's very healthy, he doesn't care about medical insurance, and he just happened to get it. So what is he getting?
Most people would want to buy at least the catastrophic. Right? So you don't get wiped. If you don't have family, so at least most guys, even if you don't want to, not interested, so you buy a catastrophic. Because you figure, listen, I'm 23 years old, so for the next 20 years, listen, what's the like, you know? As long as I don't get hit with a catastrophic loss, as long as that's covered, so I'm in good shape. You know, so that's what it's worth to you.
The catastrophic.
Well, but if that's what your mindset would be, if you had to pay for it, you'd just buy catastrophic. So that's your gain. That's the gain, is only what the catastrophic would cost you.
From what month we calculate the year?
You can make it whenever you want. The Aruch HaShulchan suggests from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, but it's not Mukhra. You can make it whenever you want. Just you have to have a fiscal year.
So if a person paid more money for Maaser, paid $10,000, and his next income going to be the next year going to be $100,000.
So we talked about this last time. In other words, that if I had in mind when I started Maaser that I want to be able to give against future, I want to give Maaser against future income. If you had that in mind when you started, you were allowed to do such a thing. Now, in general, Yerusha, so also, it's interesting. In Yerusha, a person is obligated to give Maaser on Yerusha. Even if the person himself that had the money before gave Maaser on it. Now, however, we're kinder than the IRS, the halacha. In the IRS, if you yash in a building, and they want taxes, you know, on the estate, if you can't pay the taxes, they make you sell the building. To give them their cut. The halacha does not demand that you do that. If you yash in a building, my great uncle left me a building worth $50 million in Manhattan. You know, what's kenech done? I have $5 million to my name to pay the tax, to pay the miser on it. Meichatesi, you know. So I'm not mechuyev to do anything until I take money out of the property. When I take money out of the property, then I'm starting to the extent that I take out, I'm a chuyif to miser up until the amount that I have to give miser as I take money out of the property.
How about income generated by the property?
The income generated by the property is poshut
mechuyif. No, do I have to count that against the miser I owe for the value of the building?
Not bedafka, no, I don't think so. But the real guy was being masber to me. The real estate chevra, they're very slick. It's basically the way they they understand the tax system far better than most of us. A guy in the real estate was being masber to me. He says, if you take out money, so you'll have a capital gains tax. So you don't take out money as capital gains, you borrow money against the building. Good. And most of that you put in your pocket. So that's where you take your money, how you take your money out. So the money says, it doesn't appear as, you know, you don't sell the building. You take the money out as a loan. And then I guess from the operating expenses, you pay it back over time. But Lamaisa came out as a loan, it's borrowed money. So therefore, it's not subject to tax, it's a loan. I was being masba to me recently, how, you know, this big, but when you take out money in that fashion, you really, if you're really taking money out, which is the way they take money out, then you're mechuyev to Maaser at that point. Now, what I don't really have a mahalach, a sound mahalach for, I've never been able to come to a mahalach that I'm happy with. You have investment rollovers. Now, I could hear, for example, a guy that's for his retirement, he has a retirement account, you have an IRA, a Roth, a Kia, whatever. And so you may decide to roll it over from one to the other. I decided, listen, I don't like Fidelity anymore. I like Oppenheimer now, if I can't, you know, whatever it is. So I would not see the need at that time of the rollover. It's not considered that I took money out. But the problem is, that's simple enough, that I understand. Good, that's money that's designated for your retirement. You're not taking it out until the Be'ezus Hashem, you be at Ayid HaZokin, you know, then you'll start taking money out of it. But in business, you have the same issue. In other words, you put money in, you make an investment, and then let's say you made money in this investment, but you don't want to take money out. You want to roll that into your next investment. So you have a bigger investment and a greater leverage for the next buy. You know, last time I bought a building for $10 million. But now with the money that I have in this building, I can buy a $40 million building. So I don't want to take money out. I want to roll it over and I have never been comfortable with, you know, with an answer when you should miser in such a situation. I don't know. I don't really know. I'm not 100% sure what the answer to that question is yet.
You never realize the problem. I mean, it's there, but you never got.
So you go your whole lifetime. That's what I was telling you. The real estate guys.
Why not the real estate? Most people, a lot of people out of the business, buying and selling, let's say, jewelry or diamonds, are constantly buying, and then in order to buy the next thing, they sell it the month before, they're putting it in right, and you're never really making money. The little bit that you make, you get as a salary from your company. So the salary you're getting can be tiny compared to how much money you really make. Because in the beginning of the year, you started off maybe with $5 million worth of jewelry. At the end of the year, you're up to $8 million if you did very well. So you make $3 million, but your salary, let's say, was only $175,000. So you made $3 million. You only got paid $175,000.
Yeah, because you kept it in the business to keep it out of the IRS's hands.
It goes on for dollars.
That's how you keep it out of the IRS's hands.
Nothing
wrong. It's 100% legal.
You have to keep on buying and buying. But the Amiklach and the Ur Amiklach now are sitting on $250 million worth of jewelry. And they're still each getting $150,000, $175,000 each could be. I'd say, and you know, so what do you get nicer? Just your salary?
So this is a problem. I don't have a satisfactory answer yet in this question. I have not yet figured it out.
Most businesses like to think quite that way.
Yeah, I understand. So I don't have a satisfactory answer to this question yet. Maybe the next time I come to Eretz Yisrael, I'll talk with some of the Rabbanim there to see what they have to say about it. But the truth,
at the end of their life, let's say they're 80 years old, they pass away, they leave over $100 million worth of merchandise to the next generations. But Maisa, they only gave, let's say, $15,000 a year. Because they only got a small salary. And we went on like this for 60 years.
I
suspect that some of them probably.
You come up to Yeshiva Shalom Haile, it doesn't really have a good shot.
No, it doesn't have a good shot either.
It's like.
I don't know. As I said, I'm not sure. I have yet to figure out a satisfactory
means. They're not using that money really right.
They're taking out the loans that you described.
Unless they're cashing into that.
They weren't. No, they were legitimately buying and selling, invoicing. No, they weren't doing anything wrong. Right. They made a tremendous amount of money. But they're like Bill Gates doesn't need money to live. This person didn't need to take out money from the business to live. He took out just a small salary.
The money is in the business, then it's
the money's in the products or either in chattel or real estate, whatever it is.
Are they having hanah from that profit?
The hanah is that the deals that they make, they keep on making more, is tremendous hanah, but they're not making a monetary. They live off that. That's the whole thing. That's why they go to work every day. And they also have to pay everyone's salaries. Business, which is a lot of money. If you have 12 people in the business and they're each making, let's say, $150,000 a year, that's a lot of money. But it's 12 different people, you know.
I don't know the answer to this. I'm not, as I say, I don't have to myself yet a satisfactory answer to this. So you, now that it was this Ur, the Shaila again, you know, in a few weeks I'll be in Eretz Yisrael, maybe I'll bother some of the Rabbanim there to see what they, you know.
What about the same thing to the estate? He doesn't take out the money from the estate, just sits in the estate.
He
only takes out a little bit.
So normally, in cash, you have to give Maisa right away. But in let's say, the Achronim specifically speaking, if you inherit a building, you're not mechuyev to give Maisa on it until you liquidate it.
Someone inherits cash.
What?
Someone inherits
cash l'chor, you have to give right away. That does not, you know.
Even if he doesn't take it out, he wouldn't be able to pay it all. Like the same thing.
Well, he
could take it out.
He has cash.
$100,000. Let's say the
other
person, the executive state.
If he can't. The Kohl's money can't get it, or something else. But we're talking when you can. If you can't take, you know, what you can't get your hands on doesn't help you if it's yours in this world.
So if you get your hands.
If you get your hands on it, if it's cash, you have to give Meiser on it.
You have to give, in general, you have to give Meiser on
Yerusha. On?
Yerusha, let's say, on cash.
Dayach, when I'm saying you have to give on Yerusha, yeah.
Is it like income?
Yeah.
In general?
Yeah.
Big
tax.
Yeah. Someone, let's say, Yashin's a $100,000 Steinway piano, you have to give Meiser on that?
Again, what do you do? Listen, Monosha.
So
sell it if you have no use.
You're not
mechuyev to sell it.
But
when you sell it. You know, listen, I don't play piano. So help me garnish if I have a $10 million piano. I'll have a violin from this 15th century that's worth $10 million. Help me garnish. I wouldn't know what to do with it. You know. Rabbi Shalom gives tremendous bracha. I will end with this. What a ma'isa. Ma'isa shahoya kachoya. It happened many, many years back, maybe 25 years ago, approximately. And we were. And it's funny, a guy called me up. And his wife was Isaac and Kirov at that time, but he didn't have, had nothing to his name, literally. So she wanted to invite it from the people that she dealt with. She had 100 people that she was dealing with. And she wanted to bring them to a Seudas Purim. So there was a Seudas Purim going on, so she went to the caterer. And the caterer told her, listen, I could do it for $7 a plate, rock bottom price. I can't do it for less than that. So she said, okay, she needs $700. So her husband calls me up that he needs $700 to make this Seudas Purim for his Kirov. Now, I say it's, I would laugh now because the guy has a business today that's worth over $100 million. But he had literally nothing to mamish, not a penny to his name. So I said, okay, I'll work on it. Call me in a week. It was the beginning of Adar. So this was Sunday. It came to Wednesday already. And the next Sunday, I got to, you know. So when I was baking matzahs that day, so I asked somebody in the morning, they gave me $100. I met a Chassidish friend in the day, he gives me $40. Come home at 7:30 at night. So I said, listen, I got to take care of this. I'm getting on the phone and I'm calling guys that $100, you know, they'll spring for in a minute. And I'm not getting off the phone until I'm finished. I call up the first guy. And he says, okay. He says, Rabbi, what do you need? So I said, I really needed $700, but I have $140 ready, so I need $560. He says, Rabbi, it's on me. You got it. This was Wednesday night. I meet the guy Shabbos. He tells me I'm ISA like this. Thursday, a guy walks into my business. And the guy owed me money. But money, Hilchas Ela Mashiach. Like, to ever see, I never expected to see a nickel of the money he owes me. Walks into my business Thursday. And he doesn't give me $5,000, and he doesn't give me $6,000. He gives me $5,600. That's what he pays me. Thursday. Okay? And Friday comes, Shabbos, he comes to tell me this is what happened Thursday in his business. Wednesday night, he gave the $560. Thursday, a guy walked in, money that he never expected to see, and peeled off $5,600 and paid him. Those are the sometimes bezoicha to see, you know. You know, up front, the Rabbi Shalom, it says, it's interesting. The Novi says, that with stalkers, the one place will that be Menas Hashem. It says, we could be. That we can give stalker and say, the Rabbi Shalom says, you can test me. You have a right. You have to see that you'll get broke. So, the schus of stalker is awesome, Rabbi Yisai. The Shaila is like this. The Shaila is, we say the three things which ameliorate the din. It's tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. So why does tzedakah ameliorate the din? So I have two mahalchim and why tzedakah ameliorates the din. One pshat is, the Chazal say, kol ha-marachim ala b'riyas is marachman ala min ha-shamayim. You have rachamim on people. The Rebbe Shalom is rachamim on us. That's one mahalach. I have a second mahalach. The second mahalach is, that there are people whose significance in the world is indispensable. It's indispensable. You know, we know, you know, this is the Maisa with Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. There was a guy who was a super miser who lived in Berdichev, a miser Shain Kamal. He died. And Rabbi Lezi Yitzchak went after his Aron all the way to the Beis HaKvaros and came back after they buried him. So the people came to Rabbi Lezi Yitzchak, they were up in arms. It says, the Rebbe goes Dalet Amos after every meet, and the Rebbe turns around and goes home. And this guy, the biggest miser in the history of Berdichev, you couldn't get a nickel out of him, and the Rebbe accompanied him all the way to the Beis HaKvaros and stayed there until they buried him. And what in the world is going on here? So basically the Rebbe told him, listen, this guy came to me three times in his life for a din Torah. All the din Torahs revolved around one point. That he put out money to help somebody. And then the guy came to pay him back. And he refused to take the money back. And he said, I don't want to take the money back. The Rebbe Shalom gave me bracha. So I'm not taking the money back. So the other guy was humiliated. But I'm not an oni, I'm not taking money from you. So he was three times taken to his life, but it didn't turn him but of a ditch of a, because he refused to take money back from people that he had given money to, or lent money to. No, so you have in our history, you know, all of a sudden this guy disappears. In Mitamol, the next Shabbos, this almona doesn't have what to eat, and this only is starving, and this the rent is not paid here. What happens? Only the miser disappeared. So all of a sudden, you know, there's some people that in the Rabbeinu Shalom's world are indispensable. The world doesn't work without them. So a person that's a bald stalker is one of those people. The Rabbeinu Shalom so dictated, for whatever his reasons, Gozra Chochmosa, there's aniyus in the world. And the aniyim need to be taken care of. And here's a guy that steps up to the plate and takes care. So the Rabbeinu Shalom says, what's going to happen if I take him out of the world? What's going to happen to all of these people? So the Rabbeinu Shalom is the netiya, is to have rachamim on this person. Because look at all the good that he brings in the world around him. So this is, you know, the mitzvah, Rabbi said, the mitzvah of tzedakah. The schus is enormous. And the opportunities are great. LMI, our problem is we think we're limited because I'm not a rich man. The Eibush didn't ask us to be rich. The Eibush asked each person to give what he's capable. Do the tzedakos that you're capable of giving. The Chofetz Chaim Zatzal encouraged the Balagolos to put away a few pennies a week and to make a gemach. Whatever, they'll have a little bit of money they could lend to some people. Good. So they're not a Weltskvier. But we have the ability to do some good. And that good is a tremendous, tremendous chus. May the Rabbeinu Shalom grant that we should seize the opportunity of tzedakah, the mitzvah that the Rabbeinu Shalom has given us. Thank you.